Silence your cell phones.
Tonight, we are going to start the chapter to the agnostic. We have covered the book up to page 43 in Doctor's Opinion, and we covered the first step, and we covered the steps we took, the first step, and we finished that. And, those podcasts will be up soon. And on Saturday, we finished the four-step instructions and the four-step promises, and we're going to do something special this Saturday. So if you come, I think you'll get something out of it, have something special planned. Sunday night, we're going to finish a vision for you, for those who can delay your Super game, Super Bowl watching. You can TiVo it. No scores, please. And we're going to read page 164, which is, every time I read it, I get kind of emotional. It's really powerful. And it's how the big book instructions end. So if you can join us on Sunday night at 6, Saturday 9:15. Tonight we're starting We Agnostics. I've heard this man I really respect, Father Bill W., he's passed away, but he said that this chapter, these pages, are probably the most powerful spiritual information he's ever read, and he was at the Vatican, and it's hard to believe that this was written by people who had 3 years sobriety. And there was a lot of help in writing this this chapter. Now, this chapter follows more about alcoholism, which they have tried to hammer home the idea that if you're an alcoholic, you're in deep doo-doo, and you're not going to fix it. And there's no way you can fix this on your own. And then they're going to talk about God. And we're only going to cover two pages, page and a half tonight, but there's so much information in it.
What page?
Page 44. We Agnostics. The title itself, I remember the first time I listened to Joe and Charlie years ago, they talk about agnostic as one who has no knowledge of God. You can believe in God, but you have no knowledge of God because you've never allowed God to work in your life because we were self-centered. And I looked up the definition of agnostic. It's a person who believes that the existence of a greater power, such as God, cannot be proven or disproved. It's unknown or unknowable. And in a way, that's what they were implying, because these people had no knowledge of God. I believe I do have knowledge of God at this time. God's done for me what I cannot do for myself. That's called the spiritual awakening. It's the result of the steps. So AA is a plan of recovery that will give you knowledge of God and trust in God. And so it's called We Agnostics, and they talk about, we're going to read about half of them, but I really believe all alcoholics who have the spiritual malady of self-centeredness, they're all agnostic, because we haven't allowed God to work in our lives, because if we had, then we would have a power to live. And I shouldn't say all, but anyway, forget what I said. So it says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned, so you're supposed to learn something of alcoholism. They had a hope that we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And then they're going to talk about what that is. That's the way the book is. They'll make a statement, and the next statement will either explain it or be a warning about it. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Anybody relate to that?
Yes.
Honestly, find you cannot quit entirely, and then, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I looked up or, because I've heard people say that it could be one or the other. But if you look at or, it's a connects two thoughts. And so some people have read this and said, well, you're an alcoholic if you cannot quit, or if you can't have little control over the amount you take or cannot quit. But in reading it, look at the next line. If that be the case, that implies both of those things, control and choice. Have you lost the power of choice, and have you lost the power of control? Anybody have that here? Well, they want you to know that, because now they're going to tell us how we find that power that can relieve us of this situation. And if that's the case, you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now, there's a powerful word in there. It's called only. It's not maybe, or it's suggested it's only a spiritual experience will conquer. And so the rest of the book is how we get that spiritual experience so we can conquer our alcoholism. And we actually conquer it with God, not us. But what we have to do is take the actions to get the spiritual experience. And a spiritual experience just means that you've experienced the Spirit. Now, if you're an agnostic, you've never experienced the Spirit, the power of the Spirit, because we run our lives on self-centeredness. And so that's the game. That paragraph has a lot in it. Anybody think it's good? Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. All right, so now they're really going to hammer it home. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. Now I understand that. It's impossible to have that experience if you don't believe that God can be proven or disproved. And you don't believe you can know God, then you would think that that was impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster. Anybody relate to that? Anybody think it's true? Anybody live this? I think we all did. And we hit the bottom at the point where the disaster became obvious to us. I couldn't deny that it was a disaster. Now, I was a disaster for a long time before I saw that I was. We kept saying it's not that bad. We still had a plan, right? Especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Wow. So how can you be an alcoholic and not be hopeless? So here's my thought. Hopeless alcoholic is one who cannot recover without God. And hopeless means doomed to an alcoholic death without alcoholic death, and has to live on a spiritual basis. And so hopeless means that without God, there's nothing I can do about it. And so they're going to, then the next sentence follows from that. Now, I believe a lot of alcoholics are hopeless, but a lot, maybe all of them are hopeless, but they don't realize it. So there's a difference between being hopeless and knowing you're hopeless. And on page 25, it says, when we faced the hopelessness and futility of life as we'd been living it, then there was nothing left to do but pick up the kit of spiritual tools. And we read tonight that some people are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I think there are people who are hopeless, but they can't see it. They can't see the truth of their situation. And it's like the prodigal son in the pig pen. He was there a long time before he realized it. And at one point, he realized the situation, and he said, I have to make a decision, that do I want to stay on this, or do I want to go back to Dad? So we're in the same situation. And it says, here's a powerful line, and I've gotten so much more out of it than the first time I read it years ago. It says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And the thing that's the power of this, it's not that if I see that there are two doors, I'm doomed to an alcoholic death, or I can live on a spiritual basis. That's not a difficult alternative for me, is it? Or you? But the problem is that the alcoholic can't see it. They can't face it. Face is to confront or deal with or accept, to recognize or deal with a standard of beliefs. And so it's not that they're not easy alternatives to choose from, but we can't see them. Most alcoholics want a third door. It's called an easier, softer way. Anybody heard of that? And they can't see that there are only two doors. Now, Sandy Beach makes a point about this. He says that game, the millionaire game, you get a call. They give a question and you get a call. So the guy's up there and he sees two doors, alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. He says, I need to make a call. So he's going to call his doctor, and he says, how bad is an alcoholic death? And you see, I think when I can see that I'm doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis, that I can admit complete defeat. I think that's when I can completely surrender. And when you can face it. But I think until the alcoholic faces that there's only two alternatives, I don't think there's any hope. They will not or cannot do the program. Now, how do you know if the person you're working with doesn't understand that there are only two choices? They won't follow directions. They won't work the steps. They won't do the fourth step. They fight it. But if you really truly understand that there's only two doors, you're willing to go to any length, right? You're willing to do anything to get better. And do I realize today that there are only two doors? I mean, there are only two doors for me today. You never get to the point where you're not looking at two doors. So did I pray this morning? Did I ask God for direction? Have I been looking, watching for the day, all day for my self-centeredness up here? Am I going to pray at night and inventory at night? You know, what did you do today to try to live on a spiritual basis? Because you never get enough spiritual basis points to overcome your alcoholism. You just have to get a daily reprieve each day. You never get better, so you're not at risk. I hope that was helpful. It made sense to me, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue. Anybody do that? Yes. Hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. Hoping that there was a different way, or I'm not that bad, or I've been sober 3 months, I can do this anytime, right? I don't need to go anymore. I could probably have one drink. I've been sober for 90 days. Anybody have those kind of thoughts? Alcoholics think like that. It says, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics, because if you're a true alcoholic, then you only have the two doors. But after a while, we had to face the fact, this is a fact, that we must find the spiritual basis of life or else. I don't think there's any stronger language in the big book than that line. Face the fact. There's no other way, that we must find the spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. And now they're going to go on again in the next paragraph and tell us why we must find the spiritual basis of life or else. So they're going to say, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And so a code of morals is a code of behavior that's acceptable, that's honest and true. And a better philosophy of life, the problem with the mere code of morals or better philosophy of life, did anybody try that? The problem I had is it was my code of morals and my philosophy of life. It wasn't God's philosophy of life and God's code. Many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Did anybody wake up and say, I'm gonna do better today? I'm not gonna get pissed off at 10 o'clock. I'll wait till 11. I mean, we tried. Anybody try their best? And why didn't it work? Because it was me. I had no power. See, they're going to go from that statement to the next paragraph as lack of power. You see how the book shows us? You only have two choices. You're going to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. You must face the fact that you have to live a spiritual basis of life or else your code of morals, your philosophy could never work. And it says we could wish to be moral. We could wish these things with all our, we could wish to be philosophically comforted. I tried to look that one up. It says philosophica in a way that relates to the things in a calm attitude towards disappointments or difficulties. So you had a way of reacting to the world so that you could deal with them. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Anybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. Now you might say that, but how is that going to be a part of your recovery situation? You have to live that. You have to feel that in your heart. We could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. And I wrote, my human resources, as marshaled by my will, was not sufficient. They failed utterly. And marshaled means to organize your thoughts. Now that's a powerful line because that explains why we drink. Anybody have a bad morning and swear they're never going to drink again? They're done. Anybody take a solemn oath? No solemn oaths here. And then you're drinking at 5 o'clock. How'd that happen? Because I couldn't, on my own resources and marshaling my will, I couldn't keep from drinking. Why? Because when you think about taking a drink, you can only think what it's going to do for you, not to you. And so once an alcoholic gets in his mind that he wants to have a drink, we can't stop that thought. Anybody else have that problem?
Yes.
Anybody do it more than once? We lived our whole lives that way. So here, the book's gone to 45 pages, and they're finally going to tell us what we have to do. It says, lack of power. Lack of power, that means you have no power. That was our dilemma. And a dilemma is two choices equally undesirable. So for the alcoholic, you don't want to not drink, and you don't want to live a spiritual life. And it's a dilemma. And it says, we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than me. So we're not finding a power not to drink. It doesn't say that, does it? It says we have to find a power by which we could live. And if I live by this power, then I won't seek alcohol as a solution. I'll seek the power as the solution if I feel bad. If I have fear, I'm angry, or having a bad day, I seek God. I don't seek alcohol. And God, if I seek God, then God will say, you don't need to drink right now. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than me. Now notice, power greater than ourselves is in italics. And the reason why it is, they could have written God, but they're making the point that the power has to come from outside of me. It's not anything I can get smart about. It's nothing I can figure out. It's just never going to work. I have to find a power outside of Michael. Now, I don't know about you, but that was hard for me. And that's why a lot of people don't make it. It can't be me. Then here's Stu's favorite sentence in the big book. Obviously. See, the way it's written is so powerful. You have to find a power by which you can live, and it can't be you. Obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Isn't that a good question? Now, where we find the power is in this chapter. How we find the power is in how it works and into action. So we first have to know where the power is, and that's what the rest of this chapter is about, and how we can find that power, and then how we allow that power to work in our lives is the rest of the book. So guess what it says next? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. That's why I believe in the book. It's worked for me. It's the power, how I find the power is what this book is all about. It's a treasure map to the treasure. The treasure is your relationship with God. This is just a treasure map. Now I have a suggestion. If you want to find treasure, buried treasure, and you get a map, do you think you should follow the exact directions on the map? Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
But alcoholics don't believe that, because they're going to get a treasure map and they're going to decide which part of the map they need to find the treasure, and they get lost. That's all we do. Once we deviate from the treasure map and make it our map, then things don't go as well. It has to be their map and it can't be mine. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you, sitting in the room to find a power greater than yourself. Now here's the key line, which will solve your problem. The power solves the problems, not me. That's when people have a birthday, I say, how did you let God do it? We don't solve our problems anymore. It's solved by the power. What we do is give the problems to God, and God solves our problems. It doesn't say alcohol, it solves my problem. And what was my main problem? Living without God. Conscious separation from God, living in my alcoholic world, in my mind, running the show. And if I live in the world with the power will solve the problem because I'll be with God. And I won't have the fears and the anger and the shame and guilt. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And that means ethically correct. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Now, have you heard any new people say that they don't want to hear about God? Too bad. Because if you've read the book up to page 45, you realize, well, you can't duck the issue. I mean, there are only two doors. And I heard this speaker, and I actually wrote a thought on it about the two books. And he made the point that there are two books that people read in AA. Some people in AA, one side of the room, they read the not drinking book. And they're reading the book on how not to drink, and they're okay with that. That's what they see in the book. And then there are a few people on this side who are reading the book about God, how to have a relationship with God, how to have a way of life. And he says, you'll never see people from the God side go to the reading the not drinking book, but you'll see people who going from the not drinking book and they'll go over to the God book. And you can hear that with the people in the room that can talk about being in the program for years and then finally getting into the book and going from the not drinking to the spiritual life book. And it made a lot of sense when he talks about it. And he says, I'm just going to finish to the edge of the page. Here difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we have reopened the subject which our man thought he had nearly evaded or entirely ignored. Now, the reason they don't like to hear about God, and I might have been the same way, it was a long time ago, is because I felt that God was a judging God. And that I was over here and I was screwed. Anybody else feel that way? I thought God was a punishing God. I didn't understand, but AA and the steps have made me realize God loved me the whole time I was over there and has already forgiven me. And so we have to change our idea of God. And then the rest of this chapter is how we change our idea and find out where he is. And the next few sentences follow up and then I'll quit. It says, we know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Now prejudice is prejudgment. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. I've seen that in AA. I probably was myself that way at one point. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak. Isn't that our society? The theme song as you go to rehab was I Did It My Way, right? They play that as you're waiting to check in. It's true though, even Carolee. And so I'm gonna stop there. We're gonna need to change the way we see God and understand that. And the rest of the chapter is a really powerful, so many powerful ideas. On page 47, which we're gonna read next week, is the second step question. On page 52 is the The Bedevilments, which describes our imaginable life. Page 53 is the second step question, proposition question. And then on page 55, it tells us where God is and all we have to do to find him. So I hope that was helpful. It's so well written. There's so much information in there. So we'll open it up now and